This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Ask voters what will drive them to the polls next year, and the answers tend to be the same. Healthcare, the economy, immigration. But climate change is rising up that list. A CNN poll from this April showed that 4 out of 5 Democratic voters say fighting climate change is a very important factor in their choice for president. 4 out of 5. Jay Inslee has made climate change the centerpiece of his campaign for president, and he says his experience as the governor of Washington State gives him the experience to solve some of the nation's big problems, like healthcare. He joins us in studio as part of our interview series, Foresight 2020. Governor Jay Inslee, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having us and talking about the future. We appreciate that.
We also appreciate your questions for the governor, whether you are in Washington State or from there or from anywhere in the country. So email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Governor Inslee, let's begin with the same question that I start all of these interviews with. Why should the American people elect you president?
Well, we have a country that needs a leader that will help us defeat the existential crisis of climate change. We need a leader who has had experience in that realm, and also a leader who has demonstrated the ability to build a progressive community around progressive values that has demonstrated economic growth, and therefore is the perfect leader to defeat Donald Trump. And I believe I bring both of those qualities to this effort because I have been so dedicated and successful in passing legislation to defeat the climate crisis, and now have a perfect message on a way to defeat Donald Trump, which is to demonstrate we have created the number one economy in the United States because we have embraced progressive values of taking care of the middle class and our families and respecting diversity and paying our teachers well. So those are the two top urgent things we need in the country, and I'm bringing a message of hope on both of them.
Talk about Washington State a little bit. What is it about Washington State that gives you the kind of experience as governor that you would need to be president? America has states that are quite diverse. Not everywhere is like Washington State. Maybe to our detriment because it's a gorgeous state. But what have you learned from being the governor of Washington State?
Well, we have a diverse state. We have a huge agricultural community. I started my career in a Republican red small town, town of Selah, Washington, of 3,000 in eastern Washington. What has made us successful are the things that can make the United States successful. We know that Donald Trump's trickle-down economics are not a future for America. We know his divisiveness does not represent the best amongst us. We know that we have traditional values that we ought to fight for in America. And what we have demonstrated in my state is we have shown a template for success of embracing progressive values, and as a result of embracing those values, we have built the best economy in the United States, the fastest GDP growth, the best wage growth. And we have done it because of the things we have done. We have, under my watch, got the highest minimum wage in the United States. We have embraced the best family medical leave in the United States. I'm proud this year I fought and won the largest educator compensation increase in the United States. We've got one of the best gender pay equity matters in the United States. I've signed the first net neutrality bill in the United States, and now we've adopted the first public option in the United States. Now, Donald Trump would say if you did those things, you would crater your economy. In fact, we have demonstrated we have built the best economy in the country. So this is a perfect record to match up against him to make him what he deserves, which is to be a blip in history.
We're going to bounce around to a number of different topics during our conversation, but let me just start with climate change. You've made that the focal point of your campaign. You've called for the DNC to agree to a debate that is focused squarely on climate change. Give me one of your policies that you could enact early in your administration that even climate change deniers, Republicans, conservatives, people who are concerned that fighting climate change will tank their economy. Give me an example of a policy that you believe they could buy into.
Well, everybody ought to be able to buy into job creation. And people need to understand defeating climate crisis is not only an urgent threat, not only an emergency and a crisis, but it is an enormous economic opportunity. I have believed this for some time. I co-authored a book about this 12 years ago. I helped found the U.S. Climate Alliance with Governor Brown and Cuomo. And we are now building, as I said, the best economy in the United States.
Jerry Brown of California.
That's correct.
And Governor Cuomo of New York.
Correct. So we are building the best economy, not despite the fact that we are embracing climate change legislation, but because we are. So a message of job creation is resonant to show that Trump is wrong. Wind turbines do not cause cancer, they cause jobs. And so a message of putting UAW members to work, building electric cars in Michigan, and I drive one that was built there, IBEW members building wind turbines in Iowa, carpenters and laborers rebuilding our homes across the United States. These can be and should be unifying messages because they are built around a central premise of growing good jobs. And I say good jobs, I mean good jobs. We have to have more union jobs in this country. We have to have the rebirth of the union movement. And we have to embed the concept of environmental justice in this effort.
The military has said that there are 79 bases that face potential environmental threats because of climate change. Talk about how you would deal with the national security implications of climate change.
Well, they are profound, and the admirals and the intelligence folks are tearing their hair out because they're being ignored by the White House because they're saying the truth, which is obvious. Climate change is going to cause mass migrations and political instability. We are already seeing climate refugees on our southern border, so this is already happening. I would deal with by doing the single most important thing, and I think is most central to my message, which is we understand that this is our last chance to defeat the climate crisis. We will not have another chance. The next administration will either seize this moment or it really actually be too late to save us from rather catastrophic losses. In order to do that, we need a president who will say that they will make this the top priority of their administration. And I have made that pledge, and I am the only candidate in the race who has both recognized that as the top priority and the necessity of doing that. So this is a matter of prioritizing this because we need a full-scale mobilization of the United States economy akin to what we've done in previous emergencies, including World War II, to essentially build a new economy that is not based on fossil fuels. And in order to achieve that, we have to get ourselves off of coal within 10 years and a host of other issues.
And how do you work with Congress? I mean, if Republicans maintain control in the Senate, let's say if during your administration there's a midterm flip and then Republicans retake control of the House. So say you're dealing with an entirely GOP Congress. You have some lawmakers who've expressed skepticism, completely unfactually based skepticism, about whether humans are causing climate change. You have other lawmakers who kind of don't give a damn. They're like, this isn't going to get me reelected, so why bother? How do you work across the aisle with skeptics, with people who just aren't paying attention, to convince them to walk with you on a policy basis?
Well, I've had significant success in that realm. I had a Republican Senate the first 4 years of my term, and we passed the biggest transportation package. D.C., they can't build a birdhouse here in D.C. In Washington State, we have $70 billion of infrastructure work. We passed one of the largest educational expansions in our state's history.
I think Paul Wiedefeld, the head of our subway system, would really take issue with you saying that.
Well, we'll see. But the federal government has not done anything meaningful in infrastructure in the recent past. We passed the best family medical leave in the United States when we actually had a Republican Senate. So we are capable of doing that kind of work. But on this issue, the fact of the matter is that the best way to deal with this is to remove Republican office holders who are climate deniers from office, as I was effective doing in the last election. I was chair of the Democratic Governors Association, where we removed essentially seven Republicans and replaced them with Democrats, all of whom who do recognize climate science. We replaced 40 members of the U.S. Congress and 10 members of our legislature. That's what we fundamentally need to do in the short term. Now, there's another thing we have to do, which is to end the filibuster, because the filibuster essentially will allow Mitch McConnell and the Republicans to block any and all climate change legislation that has to go.
Good luck with that. Well, like, how are you going to do that?
Well, first become president and urge senators to get off the dime and stop protecting their senatorial privilege, which effectively gives Mitch McConnell 1.5 votes for every senator he has, and they simply vote by a majority to end the filibuster. It's time to do that.
If you were president today, who would your top Republican allies be on climate change?
Well, the memory of Teddy Roosevelt, there just really aren't any, and it's very disturbing because we have Republicans who believe in climate science. The polling shows that about a half Republican citizens believe that we should actually attack climate science. But there are essentially no real good allies in that party right now because they're so afraid of the shadow of Donald Trump. And I think that's very unfortunate.
Before we pause, let me get to an audience question. Sophia asked, I would like to listen to Governor Inslee address how he would, as president, address challenges to growing a green economy for trade organizations like the World Trade Organization, of which the U.S. is a member.
Well, this is, as I've expressed, I believe this is an enormous economic opportunity for the United States. It is an enormous export opportunity where we can export both our services and our products around the world, and obtaining access to those markets is very, very important. But there's things we need to do with some of our trading partners. I'll give you an example. We need China to work with the United States to end the building of fossil fuel-based infrastructure around the world. We need to not only re-enter the Paris Agreement, but have what I would call Paris 2.0, because the science is showing that we have to go much more rapidly than we previously thought in the decarbonization of the world economy. That means we're going to have to encourage China and other countries not to be building coal-fired plants and oil plants around the world, particularly in the developing nation. We need to work with them with financing mechanisms so that we can actually build a decarbonized economy. That has to be part of our trade negotiations.
I'd love to get your sense of what you would say to President Xi Jinping when we continue our conversation with Washington State's Governor Jay Inslee. Also want to talk business. Raphael emailed, isn't it private business, Microsoft and Amazon, that's made the economy thrive in Washington and not progressive values? Love to get your sense on dealing with big, big businesses in a minute. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Babbel. Have you always wanted to speak a new language? Whether it's for travel, work, or brain training, Babbel's 10 to 15 minute lessons will get you speaking confidently in your new language. Choose from Spanish, French, and more. You'll learn through real-life dialogues, speech recognition, and interactive trainers. And Babbel's spaced repetition method actually makes you remember what you've learned. Download the app or go to Babbel, Babbel.com, to try Babbel for free.
What do all of these people have in common? Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, and Bernie Sanders.
They're all running for president.
And they've all sat down with us on the NPR Politics podcast.
NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
We are going out on the trail with as many of the Democratic presidential candidates as we can and are bringing you in-depth interviews with them.
Come along by subscribing to the NPR Politics podcast.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're speaking to Washington State's Governor Jay Inslee, a Democrat running for president. Plenty more I'd like to ask you about, and we're going to bounce around a little bit, but let me close that loop on China. You said that you would want to work with China on some of their more polluting practices as it relates to climate change. Xi Jinping has made it kind of clear he doesn't need the U.S. He's got this One Belt, One Road initiative, $25 billion of infrastructure across Eastern Europe and Asia and Africa. He knows that China is a surging economy. China has stolen untold amounts of our intellectual property with no real repercussions. There's a tremendous crackdown on human rights in China, about which the world can apparently do nothing. What can you say to President Xi to make him see things the U.S.'s way when he doesn't see anything the U.S.'s way otherwise?
Well, a couple things to make the United States stronger and more effective. And the first thing is to remove any excuse that China would have for not acting on climate change. And Trump has essentially given China an excuse. You can't exactly lecture China for not doing something about carbon pollution when the President of the United States has torn up the Paris Agreement and refused to essentially done anything, and then 2 days ago went out and said he was, you know, we've got the clearest air in the world when it's the most polluted in human history. So first you would remove any excuse for China by actually re-embracing the executive things that we can do. And by the way, the President can do things through executive order that I would be very aggressive on. Second, I would work with alliances around the world, and this is where Trump has been so damaging to our national security because he has weakened the United States by diminishing our alliances virtually in every realm, from climate change to the Iran deal to efforts to deal with North Korea. So by reestablishing alliances around the world, by removing excuses for inaction, we can be much more effective in moving the ball forward. But first, we've got to start at home by having a president who will really commit to defeating the climate crisis. And I am the only candidate who actually has said that I am committed to make that the top priority of the United States. And I'm the only candidate who's passed a 100% clean electricity bill and the one who's passed a clean energy efficiency and 100% clean grid bill as well.
If we could stick international for just a minute, I know that you've said that climate change is the number one threat, certainly to the U.S., mm-hmm. if not to the world. What's number two threat?
Well, income inequality and the lack of opportunities for Americans, at least domestically, in that regard.
I'm sorry, the number two international threat.
Oh,
if climate change is number one, what's the number two international threat?
Well, the inability to prevent new nuclear states between North Korea and Iran. And this is another example of failure of the Trump leadership, where we had a perfectly good agreement that was restraining Iran, was preventing them from developing fissionable material, was being enforced according to all our inspections. And Trump, because of this fit of pique, which he has want to, tore it up. And now we have Iran starting to develop fissionable materials again.
How do you unring that bell? Iran has made it clear, like, we're breaking the agreement and we don't care.
You go back and said, Iran, you are going to honor this agreement. You are going to stop making fissionable material because we are now going to embrace the agreement that we had with you. And we are going to enforce that agreement with the rest of the world. There was no reason except Donald Trump's individual insecurity, which has driven everything he has done as a president, to have torn up that agreement. It has weakened our national security. It is time to stop Iran from developing fissionable material by insisting on compliance with the perfectly good agreement that we had.
At what point does preventing nuclear proliferation become a military problem rather than a diplomatic problem?
You can't define lines in that regard, but I am concerned, as everyone is, about loose nukes and fissionable material that's not under good control. And I believe we have to go back to have more international aggression to, in the sense of controlling fissionable material. There's more work to be done in this regard.
A few stories in the news I wanted to ask you about, particularly this whole drama with Jeffrey Epstein, this billionaire who was charged on Monday with sexually abusing dozens of underage girls, sex trafficking. A number of Democrats are calling for Alexander Acosta, who is the labor secretary, to resign. At the time, he was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Florida, Miami, and he signed off on a plea agreement in 2008 that was basically a super-duper sweetheart deal for Jeffrey Epstein. What do you think should be done with Secretary Acosta? Should he resign? Is there another way forward?
Yes, I think it's clear that he should resign, and if not, he should be released. And I'm sad to say that this is a continuing pattern with this administration of pampering billionaires. This was a sweetheart deal in a horrendously just awful criminal case cut with a billionaire by the current secretary. There was no excuse for it. And it demonstrates yet again what I think is endemic through this administration. This is an administration that is of billionaires, by billionaires, and for billionaires. That's been true in the Trump tax cuts. It's true in keeping Acosta. It's true in his failure to protect American workers. Look, our workers have not had help in new overtime rules, something we're working on in the state of Washington. He should be helping American workers and middle-class workers by reinstituting new overtime rules. We are doing that in my state. We used to have 60% of people protected by overtime rules. That's down to 7%. And he hasn't lifted a finger to do anything about it. So there are many reasons he should be let go.
As you know, there were two earthquakes that hit California last week, one on the 4th of July and one on the 5th. Experts say another is likely to strike Washington State. The so-called big one might hit in Washington State rather than California, because both of them comprise kind of the east wing of the so-called Ring of Fire, where there's all kinds of seismic activity. The U.S. has had real issues in dealing with natural disasters in the last few years, Hurricane Maria, the wildfires in Paradise, California. Talk about how you would deal with disasters differently.
Well, I would be the first president to make it the first priority of the United States to stop the human-caused disasters. Now, at the moment, there's not a lot we can do about earthquakes preemptively, but there's a heck of a lot of things we can do from Paradise to keep Paradise, California from burning down, to keep the Midwest from being flooded, where I was in Davenport and met a woman whose nonprofit was destroyed by the floods, to prevent Miami being inundated, to prevent Washington, D.C. to having 3.3 inches of rain the other day. It was the biggest rainstorm in D.C. history. Many of these are natural, or these are man-caused, induced, and made more frequent and intense because of climate change. And this is something that is under our control, and it is something we have the power to stop. You know, it was interesting. I was talking to David Wallace Wells, who wrote The Uninhabitable Earth, and people ask him, well, you know, how aren't you clinically depressed about this, on what's coming our way, are these horrendous disasters? And he said, no, actually, you got to realize we should be optimistic about this. This is in our control. We are the nation that won World War II and put a man on the moon, and we are the nation that can develop the technologies and have an industrial mobilization putting millions of people to work to defeat the climate crisis if we get some presidential leadership. And I would intend to bring that to the country.
The border crisis is probably the most visceral humanitarian problem we're dealing with right now. What would you do in terms of managing the thousands of migrants who arrive at the border daily? Though it is worth mentioning that the figures from last month show that arrivals are down about 24%. So it's going up and down. But what would you do day one in terms of the border crisis?
Well, I would stop the intentional inhumanity of the Trump administration. And people need to understand this was an intentional act by Donald Trump to separate children from the parents. And we need to stop that policy. We need to follow American law, which gives people an opportunity to have asylum. And we have to stop the separation policy that he has created. But I think it's really important not to take our eye off the ball of the additional work we have to do. We have to get our Dreamers have a route to citizenship. And I was one of the first governors to make sure that our Dreamers had access to college education. We need comprehensive immigration reform. We're 11 million people who are working with us, who are our neighbors, who are going to soccer practice with us, have a route to citizenship.
You know, and comprehensive immigration reform are famous last words from many politicians.
Again, this is one of the reasons why we need a president who will tell the Senate to get rid of the filibuster in order to have to fix health care, in order to fix immigration, in order to fix climate change. We have to have a president who will get rid of the filibuster. Right now, there's only two candidates in this race. Myself and Elizabeth Warren have taken that position. And I think we need a president who will get serious about progress. Look, we've had so much progress in my state. I was the first president to fight against the Muslim ban. I was the first to have a net neutrality. We were the first with a public option. All of the things that I had been able to accomplish working with people in my state would be prevented by the filibuster. And we need a president who will lead that effort.
We're speaking to Washington State Governor and Democratic presidential candidate Jay Inslee. We're interviewing as many candidates as we can for our series Foresight 2020. You'll find all our conversations online under the series tab at the1a.org. Stay close.
Support for NPR and the following message come from CarMax. For more than 25 years, CarMax has made it easy to sell your car. They provide free appraisals and offers on the spot. CarMax will buy your car even if you don't buy theirs. In fact, CarMax has bought more than 8 million vehicles. To learn more and schedule your free appraisal, visit CarMax.com.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air from WHYY and NPR. We do long-form interviews with journalists breaking the big news stories and with the authors, filmmakers, and musicians behind the best in pop culture. So listen and subscribe.
Back now to our conversation with Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington State and a Democratic candidate for president. We got a few voicemails from listeners. Here is what Mo left in our inbox.
Hello, this is Mo from Oconto, Wisconsin. I'm concerned about the shrinking of the national monuments, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase. And what would he do to restore that land? Thank you.
Well, thanks for the question. Governor?
I would restore the spirit of Teddy Roosevelt, who established the first monument, I believe, is at Pelican Island in Florida, as I recall. And we need to reestablish the, not only saving the two that the Mo referred to, but looking for other opportunities for monument status. This is something that has defined my public life. I think if people know anything about me, it's about the environmental ethic that I've brought to my governorship. And we have done everything humanly possible to restore and protect our natural lands in our state. And this is one of the driving passions of my effort to potentially be a president, to restore this attitude of protecting our natural wilderness areas. This is a high priority for me, and I intend to be successful in it.
You mentioned job creation. Amazon is one of the big job creators in Washington State. Amazon, Microsoft, there are a few others. It's in the process of building new headquarters in Northern Virginia, not far from here, just across the Potomac River. There are a lot of concerns about the Amazons of the world not paying their fair share in taxes, however you define fair share, not doing enough to mitigate rising home prices, which are rising already, not doing enough to help raise the wages of the middle class, which has been flat forever. How do you convince the Amazons of the world or the Facebooks or the Googles, who literally have more users than the United States has citizens, that they have to be nicer to the middle class, to homeowners, to job creators? How do you wrangle them?
You pass legislation, as we have, that have wrangled them on privacy issues. As I said, I was the first governor to sign a net neutrality bill to insist that the large companies cannot abuse our rights on the internet. When we passed America's, I believe, most robust financial aid package for our college students, because college debt is so horrendous, just this last year we passed what's been called the most robust plan to help kids go to college. We didn't tax working people. We taxed the larger banks and the large tech companies in that regard. You work through the homelessness problem by making sure that that they pay appropriate taxes to help finance these things. But then you do, continue to create an environment where you bring people into your state because of the progressive values we have. You started to ask me a question earlier about, you know, why we're so successful in Washington. Well, it's because we do things like embrace people for no matter who you love. I was one of the first people to run for governor that embraced marriage equality. You fight against the Muslim ban. You sue Donald Trump and defeat him now 22 times, and we have beat him 22 times in court, in part because of our excellent AG, Bob Ferguson. When you do things like that, you become a magnet for people that want to come to your state and engage with their professional lives, because we are a mecca for diversity. We understand diversity as a strength.
There are people saying that the Democratic Party is pulling too far to the left to appeal to the American electorate in general. Great for Democratic voters, and I totally understand the arguments of the primary, but at a certain point, you're going to have to encourage this massive middle, the 50% of Americans who are either independents or third-party candidates, to say, to hell with the parties, I don't like any of them. What do you make of the pull of the Democratic Party? Is it pulling too far left to win in 2020?
I think we will win if we put forward a nominee who attacks the weak spot of Donald Trump, and I think there are two. Number one, and he showed this 2 days ago. It's really interesting. He went out and tried to say he had a great environmental record, which was astounding because nobody believed it. He's the worst president of the environment in American history. But that was a tell. He recognized his vulnerability on issues of clean air and clean water and our natural lands. That's why he went out and tried to say something as ridiculous as saying he was an environmentalist. That was a tell to us. That was a weakness, and we should attack his weakest point with our strongest candidate. We should identify the strongest candidate who can come up with a plan for economic growth on the issue of defeating the climate crisis to show as a contrast to his weak point, and that is on environmental issues. Second, we need essentially to show a way to deal with income inequality by building a new economy where everyone can prosper. And that's the state, our state, we've had a place to look where we have the highest minimum wage and the best bargaining rights.
That state is Washington. Its governor is Jay Inslee, and he is running for the Democratic nomination for president. Governor Inslee, thanks for making time for us.
I hope you do, and I hope you go to jayinslee.com and send a buck, and then we'll be on the debate stage. We'll have a climate crisis on the stage.
This conversation was produced by Avery Kleinman and edited by Miranda Fulmore. You'll find all our candidate conversations online under the series tab at the1a.org. Click on Foresight 2020. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.